Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:32 p.m. We are in Belts, Room 105, the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Members present today are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LIO moderator, Joseph Giesbrucht. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Today, we have two items on our agenda. Senate Bill 134, Insurance Data Security, Information Security Programs, and Senate Bill 166, Health and Psychedelic Medicine Task Force. First up, Senate Bill 134. We have bill sponsor Senator James Kaufman on Teams and his staff, Dominic Hartnett, here to present the bill. Dominic, if you could join us at the table, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation. I'd like to note for the record, too, that Senators Merrick and Bishop have arrived. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dominic Hartnett, staff to Senator Kaufman. Senate Bill 134 is intended to address the increasing concern over data breaches within the insurance industry over the last several years. These companies maintain the sensitive personal, financial, and health information of millions of consumers, and it is important to establish set standards to reduce the potential damage of data breaches within the industry. Senate Bill 134 would require state-licensed insurance companies to perform a full risk assessment of their internal and external threats and then develop, implement, and maintain an information security program based upon those threats. The standards this bill sets up are not wide in scope, but they do set standards for governance, risk management, risk assessment, third-party risk management, and incidents response. SB 134 also lays out specific requirements for incident investigation and notification. The bill would empowers the Division of Insurance with the tools necessary to effectively oversee the protection of Alaskan sensitive personal information by licensees. Similar legislation already exists in at least 23 other states, and the federal government has urged states to adopt similar measures, reflecting a nationwide recognition of the importance of these provisions. We believe SB 134 is a proactive approach to protecting Alaskan citizens' personal information from cyber threats and will enhance consumer protections and bolster the cybersecurity position of the insurance industry. Thank you for your consideration. Happy to answer any questions or take us through the sectional.
Very good. Senator Kaufman, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Thank you. Through the chair, this is Senator James Kaufman, Anchorage District F. My entire lower jaw is numb. I just came from the dentist, so it's very hard to talk. So I'm going to defer to my able staffer, Dominic Hartnett, and I'm just hearing in case absolutely needed. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Dominic, if you would take us through the sectional, that would be most excellent.
Through this chair, Dominic Hartnett, staff to Senator Kaufman. We'll start the sectional analysis of SB 134. It's a long sectional, so bear with me. Section 1 would amend Alaska Statute 2196 by adding a new section related to insurance data security. The first section, 2196-250, is regarding risk assessment. Licensees shall conduct a risk assessment of non-public information. In conducting the risk assessment, the licensee shall identify reasonably foreseeable internal and external threats, assess the likelihood and potential damage of threats, and assess the sufficiency of current safeguards in protecting non-public information. A licensee shall use this risk assessment to design the information security program required in the next section. So section 2196-260 is regarding the information security program. Licensees shall develop, implement, and maintain an information security program. The program is to be based off the threats identified in the previous section. Licensees shall designate one or more employees, an outside vendor, or third-party service provider to be responsible for the security program. A licensee's information security program must contain safeguards to protect security and confidentiality of non-public information and the information system, protect against hazards, threats, and unauthorized access to non-public information, establish a schedule for retention of non-public information, and establish a mechanism for secure destruction of non-public information. The development and upkeep process of the licensee's information security program shall implement appropriate security measures such as information access controls, identification and management of data access points, physical access controls, encryption, secure development practices, regular tests, audit trails, disaster response, and secure disposal. They must also determine cybersecurity risks to include in the licensee's risk management process, stay informed of emerging threats or vulnerabilities, include cybersecurity risks in the licensee's enterprise-wide risk management process, provide personnel with cybersecurity awareness training, implement information safeguards addressing identified threats, and annually assess effectiveness of safeguards. They must exercise due diligence in the third-party service provider process, selection process, monitor, evaluate, and adjust the information security program as appropriate, establish a written incident response plan for responding to a cybersecurity event that addresses the following: internal response processes, goals of the plan, roles, responsibilities, and decision authority, internal process for communication and information sharing, plans for how to remediate identified weaknesses, documentation and reporting of cybersecurity events, evaluation and revision process of incident response plan. Subsection D of this section also requires the licensee board to delegate responsibility of the program to executive management, which is required to at least once a year develop a report that provides overall status of the information security program and compliance with the contents of this bill. Material matters related to the information security program, such as assessments, decisions, test results, cybersecurity events, and more. If the executive management uses a delegate to implement the program, the executive management is required to oversee the development of the program by that delegate. Subsection F sets requirements for licensees domiciled in the state to submit annual reports to the Director of Insurance, certifying that the licensee complies with the first section of this bill, including keeping records for at least 5 years. And if you have any questions, just stop me at any time. Next section, 2196-270. This is regarding the investigation of a cybersecurity event. This sets investigating requirements for licensees when a cybersecurity event occurs. In the event a cybersecurity event occurs, the licensee or a responsible party shall investigate the event and assess the nature and scope of the event, identify non-public information involved, restore the security of the information systems that were compromised, and retain relevant information for a period of at least 5 years. Next section, 2196-280, is regarding notification of a cybersecurity event. This sets notification criteria for licensees when a cybersecurity event occurs. Licensees must notify the Director of Insurance within 72 hours of a cybersecurity event occurring. And licensees are affected if they are insurers domiciled in the state, they are insurance producers in which Alaska is the home state, the cybersecurity event involves non-public information of 250 or more consumers, and state or federal law requires notice to a government agency, or there is reasonable likelihood of materially harming a consumer in the state or the licensee's normal operations. The report to the Director of Insurance must include information specified in subsection B of this section in a form and format as prescribed by the director. Subsection E allows the 72-hour notification period to begin 1 day after the licensee is made aware of a cybersecurity event affecting information systems maintained by a third-party service provider. And then subsection F sets requirements for assuming insurers to notify effective ceding insurers and appropriate supervisory official of a licensee's state of domicile. Section 2196-290, this is regarding confidentiality of the information sent to the Division of Insurance. This established that all information shared with the division by licensees remains strictly confidential. This means that the information is not subject to inspection and copying under Alaska Statute 4025.110, and it is not obtainable by subpoena or discovery, and is not admissible in evidence in private civil action. All the subsections B, C, D, and E of this section gives privileges to the director when using documents, materials, or information as described earlier in this section when done in the performance of the duties of the director. Section 2196-300, this is regarding applicability. So this section establishes the criteria for which licensees are not subject to the provisions set by this bill. Licensees that have fewer than 10 employees are not subject to this provision set by this bill. Licensees that are employees, agents, representatives, or designees of another licensee that is already covered by an information security program, or a licensee is already subject to and in compliance with the HIPAA, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996. Next section, 2196-310. Regarding enforcement and penalties. This adds additional powers of examination and investigation to the director under Alaska Statute 2106-120. This does not create or imply a private cause of action if a licensee is found in violation of the stipulations within this bill. Section 2196-399, this is regarding definitions, and it defines, so cybersecurity event means an event resulting in unauthorized access to or disruption of or misuse of an information system or information stored on the information system. An information security program is defined by means the administrative, technical, and physical safeguards that a licensee uses to access, collect, distribute, process, protect, store, use, transmit, dispose of, or otherwise handle non-public information. And a licensee means a person licensed, authorized to operate, or registered, or required to be licensed, authorized, or registered under the insurance laws of the state of Alaska. Section 2, this affects changes to the Alaska Rules of Evidence, Rules 26, 402, and 501. So Rule 26, this would prohibit discovery of evidence in the possession or control of the Division of Insurance that was provided by licensee under Section 2196-260 of this bill, or 2196-280 of this bill, or that is obtained by the director in an investigation or examination under AS 2196-310 of this bill. Rule 402 and 501, enacted in Section 1 of this Act, prevents the director of the Division of Insurance acting under the authority of the director from being compelled to testify about confidential or privileged documents. It also precludes admissibility of evidence, private action of documents, materials, and other privileged information. And then the following sections regards enactment. So Section 3, this section notices the division to begin the process of writing regulations, but does not implement any before the effective date in the last section of this Act. Section 4, a conditional effect for the confidentiality section of this bill. It was enacted in Section 1, requires a two-thirds majority vote of each house as required for the court rule changes required by Article 4, Section 15 of the Constitution of the State of Alaska. Section 5 sets an effective date for the Division of Insurance to start drafting regulations. Section 6 sets an effective date for provision of this bill. I have here on January 1st, 2025. Each of these dates will have to be moved up a year because this was intended originally for last year. But so this will be, it says January 1st, 2025, but that would need to be changed a year later to give insurance companies and producers time to comply. Section 7 sets an effective date of January 1st, 2026. Again, so that would be moved to 2027 to give insurance companies and producers time to find a third-party service provider. And then Section 8, except as provided in Sections 5 through 7, this act takes effect January 1st, 2020, here it says 2024, but it would be 2025 with an update, thus allowing time for compliance. Thank you.
Happy to take Mr. questions. Harnett. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Harnett. Can you refresh my memory, because I don't know what I'm asking the question. Section 4, so it says a two-thirds vote both bodies for a court rule change?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, any kind of court rule change by the Constitution would require a two-thirds vote, and because of the confidentiality section of this for the changes to the discovery, it would require that two-thirds vote.
So it's still 21 and 11 to pass the bill, then we're going to have a separate vote for Section 4 as well?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. So there is
if you can't answer, that's fine. I'm not dunking you here. But
no, I understand. The conditional effect for that, unless that two-thirds vote is met, that none of the bill goes into effect.
Okay, so it's a two-thirds vote on this bill.
Effectively, yes.
At the end of the day.
Yes.
Follow-up?
Please.
Okay, then you... Section 5, Section 3 takes effect immediately so that the Division of Insurance can start drafting regulations. And I was looking at the fiscal note on the bill and reading the fiscal note, but did the maybe this is a question for your boss, and if you if he can't answer right now and wants to think about it, I'm going to be doing the same thing I think he had done here in a few days. So would we want to put a hard stop on implementation? You know, my point is, when do we want to have Division of Insurance have the reg package out? Because you could pass the bill, and I've seen a bill take 3 years for a reg package to be implemented. And this sounds like it's a pretty important bill with this cybersecurity here.
Through the chair, with your permission, I believe I would like to refer that question to Director Wingheyer. I believe she is online.
Yes, very good. Madam Director, please put yourself on the record and you can answer the Senator's question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we anticipate on this, I mean, you're exactly right. This is a big piece of legislation for us, but we think we could have the regulations done within 6 months, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Wingheyer. Good to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
Very good. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I wanted to ask if Commissioner Wingheyer was going to provide additional testimony. Is she an invited testifier, or should we just ask her specific questions?
She will also be testifying, yes.
Okay, thank you. I'll wait for that time then.
Other questions for Mr. Harnett? Okay. We do have Director Lori Wingheyer with the Division of Insurance here today. She has a few thoughts and insights on this piece of legislation and why it is necessary. Madam Director, if you could please state your name again for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Lori Wingheyer. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the state of Alaska. First, I'd like to thank Senator Kaufman and his staff for bringing this bill forward. We greatly appreciate it. This bill is a lot of common sense for insurance companies and insurance producers. We're exempting firms or small agencies, if you will, that have less than 10 employees. But for those that have more than 10 employees, we are willing to bet that most of them already have some sort of a cybersecurity program in place, a corporate governance of how they would address a cyber event within their agency. It is true that the NAIC put this model bill forward. Again, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners put this bill forward as the federal government threatened a preemption for states if we did not adopt a cyber policy. The model bill or the policy before you as a model draft law, it took probably 3 or 4 years for us to agree, having vetted it with industry members and amongst ourselves as to what was a reasonable adoption of a cybersecurity policy for agencies and companies. That is what is before you. We think it's reasonable. We have worked with our industry partners, and we hope to see this be put forward in both the Senate and the House and passed as a further means of protection for consumers in the event that their data is breached when it's held by either their insurance company or by their broker. And I'm happy to take any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Are there any questions for Director Wing-Hire? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Director. I'm not sure if this is for you or for Ms. Mitchell, who appears to be online from law, but the presenter mentioned that this doesn't create any private right of action. Does it extinguish any existing private right of action? Does it preempt sort of the ability to bring certain kinds of lawsuits?
Through the chair, and I'm hoping that if I'm wrong, Ms. Mitchell will correct me, it does not stop any action. If your data was breached, you would still retain the right to bring an action against your broker or your insurance company. What it does do is it stops you from getting data through subpoena from me. You'd have to get it directly from the other party, the broker or the insurance company.
Thank you. Can I
please do.
Ms. Mitchell, are you here for this bill, I assume, as well? And can you just flesh that out a little bit, maybe what the director said, or just sort of agree with her, hopefully?
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't have a whole lot to add to that. Director Wing-Hire is correct. It does not extinguish private right of action.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, both of you.
Very good. Additional questions for Director Wing-Hire? Seeing none, in the room here, we also have DCCED Deputy Commissioner Michaela Fowler available for questions on the fiscal note. Are there any questions for the Deputy Commissioner? Seeing none, at this time I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 134. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing no one, I have one person off net who is listed as wanting to testify. Pamela Samash.
Hi, thank you. You know, I just wanted to say that I hope that you support this bill. I feel like they went through a lot of effort to make sure that it was fair and successful. And I just wanted to say that there's two perspectives to look at this. From the customer's point of view, if I were the customer, I would be the customer and I would have expectations. I would expect privacy. And as a customer, I would hope that my personal data would be safe. And as the insurance provider, I would go through every effort to protect my customers. Serena, stop it, please. Sorry, I have kids here. I'm a homeschool mom. So, in today's era of technology, we need to always be one step ahead. And I feel like this bill addresses just that. So, thank you. And please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. For the record, could you just state your name and location, please?
Pamela Samash, Nanana, Alaska.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no one else wishing to testify online at this time to Senate Bill 134, we will hold public testimony open and set this bill aside for further consideration. Take a brief at ease as we set up for our next bill. back on the record at 1:58 p.m. here in Thomas Stewart Building in Belts 105. We'll now take up the next bill on our agenda, Senate Bill 166, Mental Health Psychedelic Medicine Task Force. We have a bill sponsor, Senator Dunbar, and his staff, Seth Tagarian, here to present the bill. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 166 proposes the establishment of the Alaska Mental Health and Psychedelic Medicine Task Force. Alaska's high veteran suicide rates and prevalence of domestic violence underscore the urgency of exploring innovative mental health treatments. I'll say, crucially, this bill does not legalize anything. Rather, it creates a problem-solving task force in anticipation of federal legalization of certain substances in controlled medical settings. The task force will consist of a diverse group of experts and stakeholders tasked with exploring the integration of psychedelic-assisted therapies into Alaska's healthcare system. It will meet at least four times, submit a report of recommendations to the legislature and the governor by December 31st, 2024, and terminate the convening of the 35th legislature. Research shows the effectiveness of psychedelic-assisted therapies in treating PTSD, depression, anxiety, and substance use disorders, conditions highly prevalent in Alaska, particularly among veterans. What barriers exist in implementing such therapies in Alaska? What regulations are needed for practitioners to ensure safe integration of psychedelic medicine? These are some of the questions the task force will explore. The FDA is currently reviewing MDMA for treatment of PTSD, with approval expected by the end of this year. Additionally, advanced trials show that psilocybin and ibogaine are effective at treating PTSD, anxiety, depression, and TBI symptoms. Passing SB 166 is vital for Alaska to leverage these treatments and prepare to address our mental health challenges. The task force represents a step towards pioneering mental health solutions. And I'll just leave my prepared remarks to say a couple of other things. First, this has been pursued a little bit in Colorado and Oregon, different methodology. And one of the critiques of those efforts was the lack of indigenous participation. I think one thing we're proud about with this bill is it has set seats for indigenous healthcare professionals and leaders. We want the indigenous voice to be a part of this task force. There are a number of emails you have in your packet from psychiatric nurse practitioners. So one of the great things about introducing a bill like this, you get to learn that there are other people involved that want to be involved in this. And the emails you'll see in your packet don't oppose this task force. Actually, quite the opposite. They want to be included. They want a seat on this task force. And I certainly don't oppose that. So we'll work with, whether it's a CS or if someone wants to bring an amendment, either at this committee or the next committee or referral, we certainly welcome that if we can work through the language. With that, Mr. Chair, we have a couple people ready to testify, I hope. We were expecting the last bill to go a little bit longer, so I'm not sure if they're online yet. And then I have my staffer, Mr. Tigerian, who can go through the sectional.
Very well. Let's do the sectional first. And then we'll go to invited testimony, if that's okay with the sponsor.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Mr. Tagarian, please state your name for the record and begin your synopsis of the sectional.
Yes, sir. To the chair, Seth Tagarian, staff to Senator Dunbar. So this bill would add a new section to the state law in establishing the Mental Health and Psychedelics Task Force. The Psychedelics Task Force purpose, Section 1 establishes the purpose of the task force, membership, process for election of the chair, process for filling vacancies, compensation or possibly lack thereof, and schedule and timeline, as the senator mentioned, four meetings, a report, and termination of the task force. And the Section 2 would establish an immediate effective date upon passage. And with the chair's permission, I'd just like to briefly read from the bill the language for the purpose.
Please do.
The purpose of the task force is to, one, assess the potential use of psychedelic medicine in addressing the state's ongoing mental health crisis, two, consider barriers to implementation and equitable access, three, consider and recommend licensing and insurance requirements for practitioners in the event that psychedelic medicines are federally reclassified. That's in the event that the federal government does so. and four, to consider legal and regulatory pathways for the legalization of psychedelic medicines and potential effects of the medicines on public health. Thank you, sir.
Are there questions for Mr. Tagarian or Senator Dunbar? Seeing none, we'll go now to our invited testimony. First up is Tamar Lubtish White.
Should be Dr. Tammy Lubish White, I think.
Oh, my apologies. Oh. Just reading the page here. Dr. Lubish White, thank you for joining us at Senate Labor and Commerce today. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
My name is Tamal. I go by Tammy Lubich White, and I'm a licensed psychologist. And I'm officially certified as a psychedelic assisted treatment clinician. I have done my certification at California Institute of Integral Study, which is the first academic institution that had a program certifying people to use psychedelics, alongside with MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Science.
Do you want to prompt or maybe?
Senator Dunbar.
Oh, I was just saying, Dr. Lubish White, do you have some testimony you'd like to share?
Yes, my hope is that we will not stay the last frontiers in implementing psychedelic-assisted treatment. The importance to understand is that we're not talking about psychedelics treatment. It's not that we are taking that as a medication, but we use it as a tool to assist treatment, and we do not have the right tools to deal with PTSD and complex trauma, even depression and anxiety. I mean, we are fighting a war without appropriate weapons. But maybe I'm Israeli, so it's maybe not a very good metaphor, but that's how it feels, that there is a huge need for clinicians, but also for tools to deal with people. And psychedelics have proven in clinical trials to be effective. I think that they will be, they're close to being FDA approved on the federal level. And we have a big problem in Alaska because right now there's the promise of psychedelics, but we don't have the professional, force ready for it. And we need to do it as quick as practically possible. Even right now for harm reduction, and there is a huge underground, and we need to address that. We need to educate the public and providers, and we need to do it quickly because psychedelics, like a very sharp knife, can harm and can save lives. It depends how you use them and in which hand they are and how experienced, knowledgeable, and informed those are hands on. So I hope it's going to happen. I hope it's going to happen soon. And as a provider, as a direct care provider for many years in Alaska, last 20, I know the need. I mean, we're battling that battle every single day.
Thank you, Doctor. Any questions? Up next is Colonel Beth Law. Colonel, thank you for joining us. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Hello, my name is Beth Law. I'm from Wasilla, Alaska. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. I don't have an affiliation other than I have direct knowledge and experience with psychedelics. Psilocybin mushrooms, to be specific. Excuse me. A little bit about my background is I spent 34 years in the service, 9.5 years enlisted. The rest of it was commissioned. A brief background of my trauma. I am a survivor of alcoholic, narcissistic parents, sexual assault, to include rape. I was held hostage for 3 days. The same guy tried to kill me. When I went in, that was all during my enlisted days. I deployed to Iraq. I was hit with an IED on day 7. I was given, I've been diagnosed with 5 different kinds of cancers. The worst one was in 2009. I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer and given 2 years to live. All of that comes into play when it talks about what it does to your mental health. I never aspired to do any of this as far as future for follow-up anything. I just believe in it so much that I reached out to Senator Dunbar to be able to talk to you today. During my lung cancer diagnosis, which as you can see, I'm still here. I'm a fighter. I was also a caregiver to my sister who died, my father who died, and a very good friend of mine who all died. I was their caregiver. So there's a lot of anxiety, depression, anger, survivor, all of that, not to mention the PTSD from all of my service connected trauma, if you want to call it that. In lung cancer, you don't get like a diagnosis of or a prognosis. That's not the right word. You don't receive a remission in my particular type of cancer. I didn't receive a remission. So every year I have to be screened. So every year I go up, every year I go down. And like I said, there's a lot of mixed parts in there. I spent several years on antidepressants, mood stabilizers, due to all of my combat experience and dealing with the anxiety and depression. I also spent about 2 years with the Wasilla Combat Veterans in therapy. They're here in Wasilla. Wonderful facility, by the way. But I wasn't receiving, I didn't get any, it was just a constant there. I found a facility in Jamaica called Myco Meditations, M-Y-C-O, which Myco is the study of mushrooms. I don't know if you know that or not. They have a very, it's tried and true. They've gone through all the processes for years of making their facility the best that it can be. And I went in December of 2023. And I'll tell you a little bit about that if you want to ask me some questions, but it's a week long process. There's 3 doses that are administered during that week long process. Initially, there's an assessment that's done by qualified therapists and medical professionals that evaluate your background, because one of the things that's very important to note about psilocybin is that you cannot take it if you suffer from bipolar or if you're a narcissist. That just does things to you, which if you understand what happened with the Alaska Airlines pilot back over a while back, you'll understand that whole thing. That young man had bipolar issues. So what it has done for me in my journey, it has stopped my fear of death, which was something that radiated on a regular daily basis. It helped with my anxiety in daily life and my anger in daily life, which PTSD has a lot to do with that. So I don't know what else I can tell you. other than I'm open for your questions, and I'm here to help anybody that is willing. It's hard work. It's not easy. It's also, I do want to state, it's not something where you just go and you get high and it's like a fun trip and you go on about your business. That's not it at all. It's very intense work that you do with yourself and with your therapists and with the integration that comes in afterwards, that they help you along, and they don't just give you the dosage, you do your 1 week and they send you off. There's follow up to that, which I hope if we are able to do something like that in Alaska, we follow along in that footprint. That's just my recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Colonel. Any questions from members of the committee? Next up, Bailey Stewart. Ms. Stewart, if you could state your name and location for the committee and begin your testimony.
My name is Bailey Stewart. I come from Palmer, Wasilla. Good afternoon, Chair Bjorkman and Senate Labor and Commerce Committees. My name is Bailey Stewart. I speak on behalf of Stewart Consulting. I am the governor's appointee to the Marijuana Control Board and serve on the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association as the chair of Public Relations and Governance Committee. I am also an adjunct professor at UAA, educating students on the subject of cannabis and cannabis regulation. I come to you today in support of Senate Bill 166. Given the experience I have in schedule and substances, I do believe it is in the best interest of the state of Alaska to begin holding these discussions. Currently, psilocybin is in phase 3 clinical trials, meaning human trials, and I do see the future of mental health medicine encompassing psychedelics and therapy as an additional tool. I believe it is important to the public health and safety of our residents that we begin having these discussions about what federal legalization of psychedelics looks like before this event takes place, and discuss the framework on how these substances will be regulated. While these substances can be of great use to medicine and facilitating the mental health of our residents, I do believe it is important that the substance have anticipated regulatory framework before legalization. Having experienced marijuana legalization in the great state of Alaska before having regulations in place, I saw firsthand the confusion it brought with the public at large. This bill will prevent confusion upon federal legalization and provide anticipated framework for providers to include in their practices. The future of medicine, particularly in the mental health sector, is going in the direction of assisted psychedelic therapy. I do believe this bill outlines appropriate members to be a part of a task force and could be vital to addressing the mental health crisis at the state of Alaska has seen. As an advocate, I ask that you support this bill and let the state of Alaska begin preparing for the future of psychedelic medicine. We were one of the first for cannabis legalization. Let us continue on the path of innovation by preparing for the anticipated psychedelic legalization. Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee for your time on this matter and for taking my public testimony.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, we will go to Megan Lingle. Ms. Lingle, please state your name and location for the record and begin your presentation.
Hello, first of all, I would just like to confirm you guys can hear me okay?
We can, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Hello, I'm Megan Lingle, calling in from Juneau, Alaska. I'm a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, specializing in clinical mental health counseling. And I'm calling to express my wholehearted support for Senate Bill 166, introduced by State Senator Forrest Dunbar, which proposes the creation of a psychedelic medicine task force. My passion for mental health advocacy and the potential benefits of psychedelic-assisted therapy aligns closely with the objectives outlined in the groundbreaking legislation. Growing up in the Native community of Cake, Alaska, exposed me firsthand to the devastating impacts of substance abuse and suicide. These experiences have fueled my commitment to advocating for change and pursuing a clinical mental health counseling career. I believe that the incorporation of psychedelic-assisted therapy, as highlighted in Senator Dunbar's bill, holds immense promise for addressing Alaska's mental health crisis. The proposed task force initiative reflects a forward-thinking approach to the evolving landscape of mental health treatments. As a graduate student, I am particularly interested in the therapeutic benefits of psychedelics, especially considering their potential effectiveness in treating mood, anxiety, and substance use disorders. The acknowledgement of these benefits by the FDA and the proposed exploration by the task force align with the transformative impact that psychedelic-assisted therapy could have on individuals dealing with trauma, addiction, and other mental health issues and challenges. I commend Senator Dunbar for recognizing the importance of involving representatives from diverse healthcare needs, including Alaska Natives, veterans, and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. It is encouraging to see an emphasis on the inclusion of Alaska Native communities in crafting regulations and legislation for psychedelic medicine and ensuring that the unique needs and perspectives of these communities are taken into account. Moreover, the proposed examination of barriers to psychedelic access, insurance and licensing requirements, and regulatory pathways within the Alaskan context demonstrates a proactive approach to preparing for potential federal legalization. This aggressive stance is essential to ensuring that when legalized psychedelic-assisted therapy becomes an accessible and viable option for those who can benefit from its therapeutic effects. I urge the committee to support Senate Bill 166. This legislation represents a significant step forward toward addressing mental health challenges in Alaska through innovative and evidence-based approaches. I am confident that the establishment of a psychedelic medicine task force will pave the way for more comprehensive understanding and integration of these therapies, ultimately benefiting the mental health and well-being of Alaskans. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lingle. Up next, Kathleen Wiedemeyer.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Kathleen Wiedemeyer, and I'm with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, a psychiatric watchdog group. We are asking that the committee vote no on SB 166 as written. The effort to use psilocybin for mental health treatment is an effort to manipulate brain chemistry to improve mood. The use of psilocybin has not been adequately researched as to its efficacy and safety for mental health treatment, and as such, has not earned FDA approval. If a new Alaska ordinance, for example, was based on ideal lab studies of effects at 7, 14, or even 30 days, where those not responding or having negative responses are removed out of sight, we get a false impression of what is really happening. And I'm going to quote from a recent opinion piece by forensic psychiatrist Ben Haloida that was on OregonLive.com. And I quote, "Individuals who may be predisposed to a negative psilocybin experience or a bad trip, such as those with psychotic disorders, severe mood disorders, or personality disorders, will have ready access to the drug, and some may have long-lasting negative effects from receiving it. In addition, clinical trials have been extremely exclusionary in selecting participants, so there is little data on the effect of psilocybin in real-world populations of patients with psychiatric disorders. There is a documented pattern of promoting the latest and greatest psychiatric drug treatment only to have it give way to the next great advance, which also fails as it is built on the same principle, chemically managing life's problems." We're asking you to please vote no on SB 166 as written. And I have read the bill and I understand it, but I'm referring specifically to the number four. Which is consider legal and regulatory pathways to the legalization of psychedelic medicines in the state and the potential effects of the medicines on public health. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll take a brief at ease. back on the record at 2:23. So our last testifier was a bit of public testimony, kind of interspersed here in invited testimony, and Ms. Wiedemeyer was not invited testimony. So I just wanted to make that clear for the record. Up next is Medea DeWitt. Please state your name and location for the record.
Yes, thank you. My name is Medea DeWitt, and I'm calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. Ganesh, for having me on. Some of you may know me in different facets. I'm here specifically as an Alaska Native traditional healer and an ethno-herbalist. I've worked in the state for over 20 years teaching on traditional Alaska Native plants and traditional healing practices. I teach at universities, including UAS, UAA, APU, some on consistent basis and some as a guest practitioner and teacher. I also work collaboratively with different traditional healing clinics around the state, whether they're Manelik or Norton Found, Kenaitse, SCF, and the Alaska Native Ways of Knowing at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. I also work with traditional healers that work outside of the medical clinical systems, but in a traditional capacity. And I'm here in support of creating a task force. I think it is in our best due diligence to have a task force to address these questions. As you know, or maybe you don't know, over 70% of the pharmaceuticals that we work with today as Americans come from ethno-herbalism. So to write off traditional plants that have thousands of years of efficacy in use because they may affect the body, that's actually their intent, is to affect the body. And so it's our due diligence to do the rigor to see how they're most appropriately applied in the state and also be conscious of the traditional uses of these plants for indigenous people. And so I'm really thankful to Forrest Dunbar for making sure that we have indigenous representation. Again, we're watching Oregon and Colorado and Oakland, California, and how they proceeded to learn from their mistakes and from their wins. I support this bill. I've also agreed to be on this task force, and I think that we have a really amazing set of professionals in our state, the people who choose to live and work here. We also deal with consistent complex trauma in our systems. If you know the ACE score, adverse childhood effects, we have very high ACE scores due to historical trauma, intergenerational trauma, and persistent traumatic effects. We also have a high population of veterans who need to have support in any way that we can support them with the best tools possible. And our state has a history of some very challenging events. And just in a few generations, we have changed our trajectory towards one of healing and hope. And I am fully in belief that pursuing psychedelics as medicines and doing it in a way that's ethical and thoughtful is the best way forward to achieve good mental health in our state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Stephanie Birch.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bjorkman and Senate Labor and Commerce. Thank you for hearing this bill today. I'm Stephanie Reitzman Birch. I'm an advanced practice registered nurse, and I represent the Alaska Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Alliance. We represent over 2,000 advanced practice nurses with over 1,000 advanced practice nurse practitioners, many of whom are certified to provide behavioral health and mental health services. The Alaska Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Alliance supports Senate Bill 166, introduced by Senator Dunbar, with an amendment to include a dedicated seat on the psychedelic task force for the advanced practice registered nurse as selected by our governing body of our alliance. Advanced practice registered nurses are licensed to practice in Alaska, and because of our specialized education and experience, are certified to perform acts of medical diagnosis, prescription and dispensing of medical, therapeutic, or corrective measures under regulations and statutes adopted by the Board of Nursing. In addition, we have specialty training in clinical public health, ethics, developing systems of care, and patient advocacy. We would like to have the opportunity to speak for our profession and for our patients. As currently written, the only dedicated healthcare provider seat on the psychedelic task force is chosen by an organization that represents only physicians, when in fact psychedelic therapy sessions, which can last between 2 to 8 hours, are oftentimes provided by advanced practice registered nurses and licensed therapists. The mental health needs of Alaskans have not been met with our current system of care. Psychedelics are a promising new approach to meet this need and provide an alternative approach. This bill provides an opportunity for a regulatory framework to be developed to provide psychedelic therapy using science-based and best practices. The Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Alliance supports this bill with our requested amendment, and we hope the committee will take that into consideration and adopt at some point in time a proposed amendment as a legislative substitute to pass this bill out of committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am, for your presentation. Fortunately, I see that Ms. Kozup has dropped off and is currently showing as unavailable. Very good. Are there any further questions from members of the committee for the bill sponsor or staff?
Mr. Chair, can I make a
yes, brief Senator question? Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if there is public testimony as well or if you want to take it up at a different date. I'll just say, first of all, thank you very much for hearing this bill. Excuse me. I think it's significant that we're here at Labor and Commerce rather than at the Health Committee, and that's intentional. That's by design. We're not here to debate sort of the efficacy of the medicine itself or which substances should or should not be legalized. What we're talking about is creating a regulatory framework for licensing primarily. That is, the tests that are being done on these are being done at the federal level. And we think there's going to be legalization in medical settings, only in medical settings, although that could be broadly defined to include, of course, traditional medicine as well, at the federal level within a year or two. And that's what this bill anticipates, that there will be federal action, and then we want to have the licensing in place and the regulatory framework in place. And a lot of the detailed questions that will go into that will be addressed by the task force itself, which will be bringing together subject matter experts on this sort of in this profession. So with that, thank you again for hearing this bill. And as I noted, I consider the amendment to be a friendly amendment from the nurses organization. And so I'm happy to work with anyone on this committee or the committee itself to see if that is addressed.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. At this time, I would like to invite Deputy Commissioner Fowler and staff forward to talk about the fiscal note briefly and impacts to commerce. Welcome, Deputy Commissioner, please state your name and affiliation for the record. And could you walk us through the fiscal note and the department's ability to meet the need of the task force, please?
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Michaela Fowler. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
And for the record, Aaron Heist, Division Operations Manager for the Admin Services Division of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
And thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Again, this is Michaela Fowler for the record. So we anticipate that in order to meet the requirements of this legislation, the department would need to add a full-time staff member for the next 3 years. This would be a temporary staff member, as this is a temporary task force. However, we don't have the capacity within our current staffing structure to properly research and provide documentation to a task force of this nature in order for that task force to complete their discussion, analysis, and make recommendations to the legislature. So therefore, you'll see in our fiscal note, there is a $128,000 in fiscal years 25 through 27 in order to cover the costs of that staff member. You'll also see that there are travel costs associated in all three of those fiscal years. Those costs are assuming several trips for the task force to meet in person a year. This legislation requires at least four task force meetings. We anticipate that given the level of discussion that would undoubtedly occur, that there would probably be a need for additional task force meetings. Some of those task force meetings absolutely could occur electronically. So therefore, we're anticipating six task force meetings occurring in person.
Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here this afternoon. But you made a statement. You said that you'll need a position for 3 years. And I don't quite understand why you need a position for 3 years when the task force terminates at the convening of the 35th legislature, which will be January 15, somewhere around there, 2025. So why would you need a position for 3 years? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair, we are currently in the 33rd legislature, so the 35th legislature would convene in 2027, according to my calculations. And so therefore, we would need the staff member throughout the 34th legislature. And we anticipate that there would be a final report at the termination of the 34th legislature. While the task force would go away at the beginning of the 35th legislature, we would anticipate that 35th legislature would likely have interest in the report and recommendations of that task force. And so we would anticipate having somebody remain on throughout legislative session to present and work with the legislature on any recommendations the task force had made.
May I follow up, Mr. Chair?
You may.
Thank you. I apologize because I read the document incorrectly. So thank you very much for your comments based on my question. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Other questions for members of the department? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would now like to open public testimony on Senate Bill 166. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? I don't see anyone online. We will hold public testimony open and set the bill aside for further consideration. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Wednesday, February 7th, when we will hear Senate Bill 191 and Senate Bill 209. As there is no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:36 p.m.